ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं चैव ततो जयमुदीरयेत्. Good, welcome back. We today move on to the next part of the Sanat Sujatiya. Remind you that Sanat Sujatiya is one of the very important sections of the Mahabharata, so important that Sri Shankaracharya has written a commentary on it, so that shows its importance. It's full of Vedantic teachings given by the Rishi, Sanat Sujata, to the blind king Dhritarashtra. And if you remember the context, is Dhritarashtra cannot sleep, worried about the impending death of his 100 sons, and Vidura is trying to comfort him. And in the context of comforting King Dhritarashtra, Vidura summons Sanat Sujata. Very interesting, just mentally, amazing. Yeah, somehow Vidura meditates on him, and he appears. If only that would work for everyone we wanted to meet. That would be really cool. Anyway, Vidura could do that with Sanat Sujata. He appears. And what ensues is a dialogue between Dhritarashtra and Sanat Sujata, known as the Sanat Sujatiya. And the section that we begin today, which is chapter 43, is a very, very significant section. Who is a Brahmana? And this is a matter of some debate, and especially nowadays, not only nowadays, the debate has been going on for a long, long time. And when the moment we ask who is a Brahmana, then that's stirring up the, what do they call it, hornet's nest? Is that the expression? Stirring up the hornet's nest, the nest of casteism, which is a horrible problem. But as soon as we start looking into who is a Brahmana, then we're stirring up that nest. Good. Let's stir it up. And we will, later in a chapter, deal with the problem of casteism and understand it. Understand caste is a translation of the word varna. So we'll understand varna according to the Mahabharata, and not according to common thought. We'll see that as we continue. So, let's plunge in. And by the way, right off the bat, we're going to see some stereotypical imagery of Brahmana. So, Dhritarashtra, it has this image in his head. Who is a Brahmana? He's the fellow sitting in front of the altar, just blabbering all of his mantras. And he uses a word that could be translated blabbering. We'll see that. We'll see that in just a few minutes. So this is Dhritarashtra's image of a Brahmana. Not so different. Many people today also have some negative stereotypes about Brahmanas. And we're also going to see Sanat Sujata having a very clear perspective on who is a Brahmana. We'll see that. Dhritarashuvacha, Dhritarashuva, Richo yajumshyadhiteyaha, Richo yajumshyadhiteyaha, Samavheram chayodvajaha, Samavheram chayo, Papani kurvan papena, Papani kurvan. Lipyate nasa lipyate, lipyate. All right, so King Dhritarashtra asks this question of Sanat Sujata. By the way, this dialogue takes place in King Dhritarashtra's bedroom. And we could even imagine, we don't know, but you could even imagine King Dhritarashtra sitting on his bed as we're having as we're seeing this discussion. So he asks, in the second line, Yaha Dvijaha. Dvija means twice born, and the term usually refers to the upper three varnas, Brahmana, Kshatriya, and Vaishya. They're all considered Dvija, twice born, because they're supposed to go through the ritual of Upanayana. Upanayana is being invested with the sacred thread. And part of the symbolism of that ritual of Upanayana is being born again. Your first birth is to your parents. The second birth is of your guru. That's the symbolism of the ritual. So someone who has undergone the ritual of Upanayana is then called a dvija, a twice born. You're familiar with the term twice born. Now you know what it means. So the second birth is of your guru as a part of the Upanayana ritual, the sacred thread ritual. Now here, however, the term dvija is used in a more restricted sense. Dvija can refer to the upper three castes. Here, Dhritarashtra is speaking specifically of brahmanas. So here, dvija has a more restricted sense of a brahmana. Yaha dvijaha, a brahmana who, in the first line, adhite, you have to break the words apart, yajumshi adhite yaha. Yaha adhite, one who studies what? Orachaha, the mantras of the Rig Veda, Yajumshi, the mantras of the Yajur Veda, and Samavedam, studies these three Vedas. So Yahadvajaha, that Brahmana who studies all of them, what about that Brahmana? Papani Kurvan. When that pious Brahmana Kurvan is doing what? Papam, commits a sin. When that pious Brahmana commits a sin, pious Brahmanas commit sins? You bet. Otherwise, that won't come in this verse. So in ancient times and modern times, pious Brahmanas are still human beings. And just a quick comment. In modern times, your most common interaction with someone would be interaction with a temple priest. Now, please bear in mind that temple priest is committed to these religious practices. That temple priest is not necessarily pious. The temple priest is doing this mostly as a job. It's their profession. Now, there are a great many pious priests. There are a great many impious priests. This is true of any profession. How about physicians? Are there very pious, God-fearing physicians? Sure, plenty of them. Are there atheistic and negative-thinking physicians? True. In any profession, how about engineers, cooks, chefs, in any profession, there are some people who are pious, some people who are impious. Would that be any different with regard to temple priests? It'd be no different. So for the temple priest, it's a profession. Hopefully that temple priest is a very pious priest. We hope so, but it's not always the case. Bear in mind it's their profession. And it's often their profession. Why? Because her father was a priest. That's mostly the case. Not always, but mostly. The father was a priest, so therefore, son grows up to be a priest. In some cases, the son doesn't have any choice. Dad says, he says, you go to the Pathashala and you do your studies, etc. Okay, just to make the point here. So here, this Brahmana is referred to as one who papam kurvan, does some sins, not impossible for the reasons we just discussed. So that Brahmana who goes on chanting the Rig, Yajur, and Sama Vedas, that brahmana, papani kurvan, who commits a sin, papena lipyate, nasa lipyate. This is a question. Is that brahmana lipyate, tainted, stained, papena, by the sin? Does the sin affect the brahmana? Literally, does the sin stick? That's the language used. Does this sin stick to the brahmana? Or nasa lipyate, does it not stick to the brahmana? There was one president who was called Teflon. Nothing would, no accusation would stick to do that. So I guess here the question is a brahmana like a Teflon brahmana, nothing will stick, or everything will stick? This is Dhritarashtra's question, to which we get to reply. Sanat sujatu vacha, sanat Nainam saman richo vapi, nainam saman richo. Naya junshi vichakshana, naya junshi. Trayante karmana papan, trayante karmana. Nate mithya bravimyaham, nate mrithya. Vichakshana, he addresses King Dhritarashtra, O wise king, the na enam samani ritshaha and yajumshi. Samani, the verses of the Samaveda, ritshaha, the mantras of the Rigveda, and yajumshi, the mantras of the Yajurveda. What about them? In the third line, na trayante, they will not help you cross. And you have to pick up the word enam right at the beginning. Enam trayante. Look how far apart those words are. You have to connect those words. Enam trayante. Enam is a pronoun, see object. So that brahmana, enam, that brahmana, na trayante. This recitation will not help him, will not help him, karmanaha papan, will not save him from papan karmanaha, from bad karma. It will not protect him. That would be a good translation. That the recitation of the Vedas will not protect him from bad karma. Now at this point, we better have a discussion about the law of karma. Some of you are familiar with something called prayaschitta karma. So we want to find out here, yes, just to make it more clear, how can Sanat Sujata so definitively say that this pious act, this spiritual practice of reciting Vedas, he just boldly says, it will not protect those brahmanas from the sins they commit. That's a very bold statement. It's also very correct based on a proper understanding of the doctrine of karma. To get that understanding, we have to explore what is prayaschitta karma. Many of you are familiar with that term. It's usually translated as expiatory karma. Expiation means making up for something. So if you commit a papa, a sin, it is held that there are certain rituals or practices that you could do which are prayaschitta karmas, which have the effect of removing the sin. Now that's as it's commonly said. If you commit a sin, then you should do this particular prayaschitta to remove that sin. Prayaschitta can be prayers, can be rituals, can be any number of practices, fasting, any kind of tapas, etc. Mostly you're all familiar with that concept. Now, suppose we examine that teaching from the standpoint of our understanding of the doctrine of karma. Many of you have been here when we've gone through the doctrine of karma in great detail. And we need to understand it a little bit technically in order to be able to answer this question, to address this issue. Now, We use the word karma very casually. When we speak of karma, we're really referring to karmapala, right? When you speak about my karma, karma means deed, act. But when you speak of my karma, you're not talking about my deed or my act. You're talking about the result of my past action. So that is karmapala, the result of my past action. And then we make a further differentiation that karmapala can be drishta and adrishta. For every action, there's an immediate seen result, and there is a deferred result that'll take place at some point in the future that is unseen in the present moment. That's called adrishta. So when you talk about my karma, you're actually talking about my adrishta karma pala, right? It's shorthand. And not surprisingly, adrishta karma pala is a mouthful, so we say my karma. Fine. But let's understand then, how does that karma work? So remembering the distinction between drishta and adrishta karma, if I take my glasses and I fling them at you and it hits you in the forehead, there's drishtapala and adrishtapala for me. What is the drishtapala for me? I no longer have my glasses. Problem. What is the adrishtapala for me? Since I did a harmful deed and hurt you by hitting you in the head with my glasses, I should be the recipient at some point in the future of some undesired result. That is the adrishtapala. Notice, drishtapala is I don't have my glasses, which is in the immediate present. Adrishtapala takes place later, and when we have no idea. It could be in a few minutes, could be in a few years, could be in a few lifetimes. We have no way of determining when that adrishtakarmapala will fructify. We don't know. One thing we do know, however, is it will fructify. Why? Law of karma says, for every action, there must be both kinds of pala. If I drop my glasses, this is just science, if I drop my glasses, they must fall. It's a law of nature. So, and similarly, if I commit a deed, I must get the result. Now, this is a nice analogy. Some of you have seen me use this before. Suppose I drop these glasses and they remain in the air waiting to fall. I let go of the glasses and they're just suspended waiting to fall. That's a really nice metaphor for adrishta karma pala, right? The action has been committed, which means I let go of the glasses, but the result has yet to take place. They're suspended, waiting to fall. So with that image in mind, that image that makes us understand adrishta karma pala. Now, coming to our text. These brahmanas who commit a sin, they've committed a sinful act, which means they're going to have some undesirable consequence in the future, adrishta karma pala. Now, the harmful actions they've committed create the situation where the adrishta is waiting to happen. Like glasses suspended in the air, the adrishta karma pala is waiting to happen. So they've committed the sin, the result is waiting to happen, like the glasses hanging in the air. You with me? Now we get to the final part of it. Tell me, what could the brahmanas do to remove that pending result? The action has been committed, the result is waiting to take place, and the common conception of prayaschitta, which is a wrong conception, we're going to discover in just a moment, the common conception of prayaschitta is like a karmic eraser, right? You get to erase some bad karma. That's karmic eraser. So if the brahmana has done some papa karma, then what should he do? He should om sahasrishya shapurusha sahasraksha sahasrapasavumim samram. He should do some Vedic chanting really fast to get lots of, to really make sure that he erases that papa karma. I'm kind of being facetious here to make a point. And here's the real point. Since adrishta karma pala, the action has already been committed, the result is waiting to take place, like the glasses suspended in air, what could prevent the glasses suspended in air from falling? According to the law of science, the glasses must fall. According to the doctrine of karma, for every harmful act you commit, you must receive the result. There's no karmic eraser. We have to understand prayaschitta. Prayaschitta is important, but I'll help you understand it in a different way. So, every harmful act you commit must yield its negative consequence upon you, and there's no such thing as a karmic eraser. According to the law of karma, every act must bear its result. Now, how to understand prayaschitta? By the way, I have to warn you, there are multiple interpretations about this in the tradition. I'm giving you the interpretation taught by my guru, Pujya Swami Dayananda, who made this exactly the point I'm sharing with you right now. He said, prayaschitta helps, but not as a karmic eraser. He says, prayaschitta cannot erase the result of an act that's already been committed. Sorry to be repetitive, but once you've done the act, you must get the result. That's the law of karma. Then what is the role of prayaschitta? Prayaschitta is a punya karma. It's a good action. It's an action that invokes Ishvara's blessings, to use Pujya Swami Dayananda's language. Any punya karma invokes the Lord's grace. He liked that term. So every prayer, every pious act, including this Vedic chanting, all of it invokes the Lord's grace. Now, here's the point of prayaschitta. If you commit some sins now, it means you know, without doubt, you've got some bumps in the road ahead of you. Wouldn't it be nice if you had some additional blessings to help you navigate the road with those additional bumps? This is how Pujya Swamiji explained prayaschitta. It does not erase the effects of those bad karmas. What it does do is invokes Ishvara's grace, his blessings, anugraha, and blesses you in such a way that when those papa karmas bear their fruit, you can handle them better with that additional grace. This is the understanding. And again, I cannot say that all Hindu scholars share this perspective. There are some Hindu scholars which hold a different perspective, but that different perspective is problematic by logic. So I can't say wrong, because you can't, when we're talking about karma, we can't prove things or disprove things. There's no solid proving or disproving. What we do is analyze things and find out what is reasonable and what is less reasonable. We can't prove. So, with regard to prayaschitta, it is less reasonable to consider prayaschitta karma as a karmic eraser. It is more reasonable to consider that prayaschitta karma invokes God's blessings and then helps you deal with the consequences of your papa karma when they come up in the future. Enough said? Now that we understand that, now we can make sense of why Sanat Sujata took this perspective. It's pretty easy to see which point of view Sanat Sujata embraces. Because these brahmanas are chanting the Vedas all the time, which means if their incessant chanting functioned as prayaschitta karma, and that prayaschitta karma was indeed a karmic eraser, then they're simultaneously erasing all the bad karmas they do. They can go on and commit more bad karmas because they're going they're going to do this karmic eraser thing. It's a little bit like someone who eats too much and then they get extra exercise to burn off the additional calories. So this is the thinking of those brahmanas, and Sanat Sujata rejects that kind of thinking. He says, natrayate karmanaha papan. They are not protected from the result of their bad karmas by their Vedic recitation and other religious practices. Now we can understand why Sanat Sujata said that, right? Okay. And further he says, nate mithya bravimi aham. Nabravi mi aham. I'm not saying mithya te. I'm not saying anything wrong to you. Mithya means false. What I'm saying to you, O King, is not false. I'm telling you the truth. And what is the truth? Prayaschitta karma, according to Sanat Sujata, is not a karmic eraser. It does not remove the negative consequences of the bad karmas performed by the brahmanas. Then, of course, now Dhritarashtra is really confused. So he asks, Dhritarashtra vacha dhritra na ched veda veda vidam na ched veda shakta stratum vichakshana shakta stratum. Ata kasmat pralapo yam ata kas brahmana nam sanatana brahmana chet if na chet vedaha vedavidam. We have to break all these words apart. He says chet if vedaha, if that Vedic recitation na shaktaha tratum is not capable of protecting. Tratum, to protect. Shaktaha, capable. If the Vedic recitation, if the Vedas, literally, if the Vedas, na shaktaha tratum, are not able to protect. Protectum vedavidam, that brahmana who knows the Veda. Vedavit means one who knows the Veda. So the brahmana who knows the Vedas and who's chanting. So Dhritarashtra's question then is, if those brahmanas are not protected from sin by their Vedic recitation, ata, then, kasmat, why, I am pralapa sanatanaha brahmananam. Kasmat, why, brahmananam, for those brahmanas, those pious brahmanas who go on committing sins, he says, why, I am pralapaha, this incessant chatter, sanatanaha, unending, this eternal pralapa, this, I said before, the modern English word, blabbering. The pralapa has that sense of blabbering. So he's speaking here in very harsh terms. So he says, why do the brahmanas go on with this blabbering? Blabbering, of course, is recitation of the sacred Vedas. So you can see Dhritarashtra's opinion of these brahmanas. So he calls sacred recitation, he calls it blabber, pralapaha. And he says, if the to paraphrase this verse, if those brahmanas are not protected from sin, if they're not protected from the consequences of their sin through the prayaschitta of doing all this Vedic chanting, then Dhritarashtra says, why do they go on chanting and chanting and chanting? What is the point of it all if they're not protected in any way? If there's no benefit for their chanting. Here, Dhritarashtra is kind of revealing the fact that he doesn't really understand the doctrine of karma very well. And of course, that's Sanat Sujata's job, is to help him understand better, which he does. Sanat Sujata vacha, Sanat Sujata asmin loketa pastaptam, asmin loketa palamanyatra drishyate, palamanyatra brahmananam hi me loka, brahmananam hi riddhe tapasi samyataha, riddhe tapasi samyataha. Tapas taptam asmin loke anyatra palam drishyate. Tapas refers to spiritual practice or austerity, and the Vedic recitation the brahmanas are engaged in is a form of tapas. It's a form of spiritual practice. It's a kind of austerity, and especially for the brahmanas who went to the patashalas and learned traditionally, they had to memorize and memorize and memorize. Generally, they memorize an entire Veda. So to memorize an entire Veda is no small task. Generally, they spend 12 years in a patashala doing that traditional study. And that study is not pleasant. I'm told that the guru in a patashala has a nice technique for correcting the mispronunciation that students commit. I've never seen this myself, but I'm told that a common technique is for the guru, when a guru hears someone mispronouncing something, they'll just point. And then the student knows that the student has to do their own kind of prayaschitta. What is the prayaschitta? In the patashala, the students are taught, if you make a mistake, you have to take your knuckles and rapid heart. Now, what that does is, of course, it inflicts some pain. And, of course, this Professor Skinner, who lived so many years ago, would appreciate this. This is behavioral psychology. If you make a mistake and then have some pain, you avoid making that mistake again. This is a principle. So it's kind of a tough principle, but it's employed in patashalas even today, I'm told. So the point I'm making is why it's called tapas. It's some difficulty involved in this Vedic recitation. So here, Sanat Sujata says that tapas taptam, when these spiritual practices are performed, he says, asmin loke, in this world, in this life. When spiritual practices are performed, asmin loke, in this life, he says, anyatra, elsewhere, palam drishyate, the results are seen. The results take place later. So for the brahmanas who are engaged in this spiritual practice, this punya karma, asmin loke, in this life, he says, the results are born anyatra, in the next life. Palam drishyate, the results are seen in the next life. Meaning that even though, look how precise he's being about the doctrine of karma. He denies the fact that this Vedic recitation can act as a karmic eraser. But does it mean that Vedic chanting has no result? So understand the difference. He denied that the Vedic chanting functions as a karmic eraser. What did we say before? It invokes Ishvara's anugraha to bless you later when you face the consequences for your papa karmas, meaning Vedic recitation is a punya karma. It must yield its result. And he says specifically, anyatra, in the next life. Now, we have to add something here. Since we're seeing the doctrine of karma here in a little bit of detail, let's understand there's a distinction he's not making because he's teaching Dhritarashtra. And to be honest, you're in better shape than you understand more than he did. So you deserve and you need a little further explanation. There are two kinds of tapas, two kinds of spiritual practice, and we need to make that distinction. So here, we're going to use the word karma in a specific sense of tapas, which means spiritual practice. So we're talking about karma in a restricted sense. Karma means any action, but we're going to talk specifically of spiritual practice. But we'll still call it karma. So there are two kinds of karma. These brahmanas who go on chanting, in fact, let's see the last part of this, and then I'll come back to it. Look what it says. These brahmanas who go on chanting, it says, brahmananam, in the third line, for those brahmanas who go on chanting and chanting according to Dhritarashtra, who go on blabbering incessantly. So we would say to those brahmanas who go on reciting the sacred Vedas continually, what about them? Ime lokaha. They get ima lokaha. The literally means these worlds. We mean like heavenly domains. Means that they receive the blessings due to their pious actions, they receive at a later time and place. Anyatra, Sanat Sujata says. So these brahmanas are doing all this chanting, they're engaged in this spiritual practice for what purpose? Going to heaven or getting a better rebirth? Which means, and this is true of most religious practice. Not all. This is true of most religious practice. Most religious practice is done for a particular result at a later time. Most religious practice is done, I want to have a better life, I want blessings. How many times? I want my family to be blessed, I want my parents to be blessed, I want this, I want that, I want this, I want that. And then the prayer ends up being like a shopping list. Hey Bhagavan, ye de do, ye bhi de do, you know, please give me this, please bless me with that, etc., etc. You know, I wasn't raised in a Hindu family. We had in a Christian family, we had our own version of this. At Christmas time, there's this tradition that Santa Claus, who is Saint Christopher, is supposed to give presents. So little children, if they were good little children, they were supposed to make up a list of things that they hoped Santa would send. And you didn't even have to give the list to Santa because Santa knows everything. So this is the Christian version of it. You make up that list of Christmas presents you hope to get. All of this illustrates something we call sakama karma. Actions, and again, the actions we're talking about are specifically religious practices. Religious practices that are done, sakama means accompanied by desire. Religious practices that are done for the sake of fulfilling a desire. Sakama karma are religious practices that are done for the sake of fulfilling a desire like going to heaven, a desire like blessings for your family, a desire like better rebirth, etc., etc., etc. Now, the fact that I've used the term sakama suggests there's an opposite. And the opposite is called, as most of you know, nishkama. Nishkama karma is a religious practice that is done not driven by a particular desire, not for the sake of fulfilling a particular desire, but is done, nishkama literally means without desire. Now you might think, why would anyone do anything without desire? Well, it's a little bit of a misnomer. Without a particular desire, but instead, nishkama karma, is that you've also learned some karma yoga. This is the main topic. One of the main topics in karma yoga is to be engaged in pious activities, not for the sake of the results, but for the sake of contributing to your spiritual growth. This is nishkama karma, means to be engaged in a life of dharma. I'm giving you the perspective of karma yoga. This is a topic of karma yoga right now. Karma yoga in general means to use your actions, whatever those actions are, for the sake of spiritual growth. Here we're talking about religious practices in particular. Bear in mind that priests are doing all this Vedic chanting. It's a good observation. When priests are involved in Vedic chanting, is it sakama karma or nishkama karma? They're actually paid to do that Vedic chanting in a temple. They're paid to do it. Then you might say, Swamiji, what about their rituals at home? So these pious brahmanas are supposed to do this Dwikala Agnihotra. They're supposed to do some rituals morning and evening. They're not paid to do those rituals, and they're doing this chanting at home. So you might argue, well, then why are they doing that chanting at home? For a different reason, if they don't do those rituals, they incur sin. Because they're a brahmana, because they've been trained in this tradition, they're afraid of accumulating the sin of omission if they fail to do their rituals. So the Vedic chanting done by these priests is all sakama karma. It's driven by their desire to avoid sin. It's driven by their desire to accumulate good karma to win them a better rebirth or going to heaven, as opposed to nishkama karma, is when you commit a deed and say, O Lord, hey Ishvara, I'm doing the best I can, I'm trying to follow Dharma the best I can, whatever comes, it's in your hands. With this attitude of karma yoga, I'm doing the best I can to follow Dharma. There's several ways of explaining it. This, by the way, opens up the huge topic of karma yoga, which would take us a long time to explore. So I'm just hinting at a few aspects of karma yoga. Suppose you say, hey Bhagavan, I'm doing this prityartham, for the sake of pleasing you. If I do an action for the sake of pleasing the Lord, is that sakama karma or nishkama karma? Nishkama. If I'm doing it to please Ishvara. If I'm doing it for the sake of following Dharma, because following Dharma will contribute to my spiritual growth. Is that really sakama? I mean, you could argue, is that sakama karma? You want spiritual growth, I agree. But it's not sakama karma in a conventional sense. You're not following Dharma for the sake of a better rebirth. You're not doing it for the sake of blessing your family or for the sake of a particular goal. So to follow Dharma or to do any spiritual practice for the sake of promoting your spiritual growth, for the sake of coming closer to Ishvara, for knowing Ishvara more, such practices are nishkama karma. Now, we make this distinction. We're talking about not karma in general. We're talking about religious practice. We're dividing religious practice into these two categories, and these are really different categories. So sakama karma means religious practice for the sake of a particular result. If you go to the temple and you pay the priest to do some arati, and you tell the priest that you wanted to bless your family, sakama karma, absolutely. On the other hand, if you go to that same temple, you could even pay the same priest to do some same puja, and he says, what should I, the priest might ask you, what should I include in the sankalpa? He might ask you your gotra and all of this stuff, and you know, for what purpose are you doing this ritual? Suppose you were to tell the priest, loka sangraha. I want this ritual done for the sake of world peace. That's really not sakama karma. That would be considered nishkama karma. It's not yielding a benefit unto you. Now, we're trying to make this distinction quite clear because it might be a new idea for some of you, the difference in religious practice between sakama karma and nishkama karma. And coming back to this verse, it has a very distinct connection. And that is, for sakama karma, the results are, as Sanat Kumara says, the results are anyatra. He says, palam anyatra drishyate. The results, and he's talking specifically of sakama karma in this verse, the results of sakama karma are anyatra drishyate. They are seen elsewhere. They're seen later, meaning the results will come to you later in this life or in the next life. The distinction then is nishkama karma has its results now, immediately. This is the distinction. Nishkama karma are those religious practices done not for the sake of a better rebirth, but done to bless you immediately with satta shuddhi, purity of mind, to purify your mind and heart. That purification of your mind and heart is a result that takes place not in your next life. It's a result that takes place immediately. And if you say, how does it take place immediately? We've made that distinction before between drishtapala and adrishtapala. So I'm getting quite elaborate, but this is a topic you may not have thought about before. For every ritual or practice, there can be more emphasis on drishtapala or adrishtapala. Let me be specific. Suppose you decide to do some yajna, some homa, havan. So you're putting, you know, Indraya swaha shivaya swaha swaha, you know, more and more ghee goes into that fire. What is the drishtapala of pouring all that ghee into the fire? The drishtapala is flames and smoke. Seriously, the drishtapala is flames and smoke and ashes and, you know, whatever takes place. So you're obviously not doing that ritual for the drishtapala. You're doing that for adrishtapala. And usually it's sakama karma. Usually, not always. Usually it's sakama karma. You're doing it for the sake of adrishtapala that you receive later in this life or in some future life. As opposed to the attitude of karma yoga, which turns your whole life into a yajna. We could spend hours talking about this and just hinting at karma yoga. You turn your life into a sacrifice. is one way of understanding karma yoga. If you turn your life into a sacrifice, there's still both the drishtapala and the adrishtapala. But when you turn your life into a sacrifice, notice in the prior example, the drishtapala was unimportant, smoke and flames. The adrishtapala was prominent in the ritual. So, but contrary-wise, when you turn your life into a ritual, the drishtapala becomes prominent. The immediate effect of your spiritual practice to purify your mind and heart, to make you prepared. In our meditation session, we talked about gaining that adhikaritvam, that preparation of your mind to discover what the ancient rishis discovered, to gain that mental preparation, that is the drishtapala of turning your life into a sacrifice. Turning your life into a sacrifice, which means being engaged in karma yoga and other spiritual practices for the sake of spiritual growth, is nishkama karma. You're not turning your life into a sacrifice for the sake of going to heaven. You're turning your life into a sacrifice for the sake of discovering who is what is Ishvara for spiritual growth, culminating in liberation now, here and now in this life. So, to finish this, and I'm getting much more, I think I'm doing this a little elaborately because I don't think I've taught it here before, this particular distinction. So I'm spending a little time on it. So here's the distinction. All karma has both drishta and adrishta pala, but there's a difference in emphasis. When you do the havan, the emphasis is on which? Adrishta pala. So for sakama karma, the emphasis, it has both. Remember, you still got smoke and flames, which is drishtapala. You can't say you don't get it, you do get it, but it's secondary. So what is prominent for sakama karma is adrishta, the adrishtapala, which comes later. What does he say? Anyatra drishyate, the results come later. As opposed to nishkama karma, when you're doing actions not for the sake of going to heaven, not for the sake of a particular purpose, but when you're engaged in any spiritual or religious practice for the sake of your spiritual growth which is drishta pala, which takes place now. So the emphasis of nishkama karma is on drishtapala, the spiritual growth and blessings you receive now. Doesn't mean there's no adrishtapala, because there must be. For every karma, there's both. But there's a difference in emphasis. For sakama karma, a spiritual practice or religious practice done for a specific reason, he says, anyatra palam drishyate, you get the result later. But when you are engaged in a spiritual practice like meditation, like prayer, like karma yoga, it's not for the sake of your next life. It's for your immediate spiritual growth. That's called nishkama karma. Like on Saturday mornings when we're chanting Vedas here, are we chanting Vedas like the Brahmanas for the sake of going to heaven? Or are we chanting the Vedas for the sake of spiritual growth? This is nishkama karma, which has drishtapala as its results, which really shows the emphasis in Vedanta. I'll finish this up. We'll come back to the verse. The goal of a Hindu belief system, I'm choosing my words very carefully, a Hindu belief system, like you know, you pray to Lord Vishnu, and Lord Vishnu will bless you, which is absolutely valid, but the goal of such a religious practice is adrishta phala. It's a blessing that you receive after, maybe later in this life or in the next life. But in Vedanta, as you all can appreciate, the emphasis is not on adrishta phala. Please notice, in the Hindu tradition, in the broader Hindu tradition, there's a lot of emphasis on the adrishta, right? As opposed to this Vedantic tradition, where not all the emphasis, the real main emphasis is on drishta phala, spiritual growth now. Okay, enough. So finishing this verse. So he says, palam anyatra drishyate, for all of that Vedic chanting, the results are gained later in the next life. And what are those results? Brahmananam ime lokaha. The ime lokaha, these worlds, these heavenly domains and other blessings, brahmananam, are received. They are to the brahmanas. In fact, they are samyataha. Make that connection. They are acquired. Ime lokaha, these heavenly domains, samyataha, are acquired. Acquired by whom? Brahmananam, by the brahmanas. Under what condition? Uridhe tapasi. And they're acquired when their tapas, which means they're chanting, when their chanting, uridhe increases. So he is answering Dhritarashtra's question. Dhritarashtra didn't just say blabbering. He called it incessant blabbering. Why are they doing so much? And here Sanat Sujata explains, why are they doing so much recitation? It's due to the intensity of their practice that they gain those blessings in the next life. So Riddhe Tapasi, when their spiritual practice intensifies, when their chanting is incessant, when their chanting of the sacred Vedas is incessant, then palam anyatra drishyate, they gain blessings in the next life. We'll just see a little bit more here. Because Dhritarashtra is full of questions. So he says, Dhritarashtra vacha, Dhritarashtra katam, there it is, katam samriddham apriddham, katam samriddham apriddham, tapo bhavati kevalam, tapo bhavati. Sanat sujata tad bruhi, sanat sujata tad. Yatha vidyama tad vayam, yatha vidyam. All right. So his next question, Dhritarashtra's next, notice it's one question after another. And so the next question, he says, katam, how is it that, it's a funny expression, samriddham api riddham tapaha. So when, for the priests whose tapas means spiritual practice means chanting, for these priests, their spiritual practice, their chanting is already riddham. It's already a lot. Riddhi means increase. So riddham, increased, as an adjective. So Dhritarashtra is still being fairly sarcastic here. He says, these priests are already doing a lot of chanting. So he asks, how will increasing their chanting, he says, how does increasing their already considerable chanting, he says, tapo bhavati kevalam, how does that amount to spiritual practice? So Dhritarashtra, being quite sarcastic here, he says, they're already blabbering a lot. How will increasing their blabbering, how is that to be considered a spiritual practice? So in this context, he is questioning the validity of the very spiritual, of the efficacy of chanting the Vedas, and he asks Sanat Sujata, Tad Bruhi, tell me that, O Sanat Sujata, Yatha Vidyama Tadvayam. As you might understand it, as you understand this, please tell me. Now, I thought we would get further. I guess I went off on this Sakama Nishkama quite a bit. So let me, we're not going to go further, but let me show you what's coming, because otherwise you're wondering what is the argument here. So the question is mere Vedic recitation in and of itself a spiritual practice? And Sanat Sujata himself negates that. You'll be very surprised. He says, mere recitation yields no benefits. But this Vedic recitation done by one who has a pure heart, by one who follows Dharma, by one who's committed to a life of Dharma, that bears practice. And his argument goes like this. Vedic chanting yields its results when done by a brahmana. Remember, that was in the introduction. We haven't gotten that far yet, so we're going to get it next time. I guess next, I use that metaphor, stirring the hornet's nest. We'll stir the nest next time and get into who is a brahmana, because the argument goes like this, and that is, Vedic recitation will bless you only when it's done by a brahmana. Now the question is, who is a brahmana? Are you a brahmana because your parents were brahmanas? He rejects that. Absolutely he rejects it. You are a brahmana not because you're born of brahman parents. You are a brahmana because you have brahmana guna. You have brahmana qualities. And he's going to list no fewer than 12 qualities you should have and 12 problems you shouldn't have. And only one who has the 12 qualities and is free of the 12 problems, that person is a brahmana, that person will be blessed by Vedic chanting. And if you don't have those 12 qualities and if you don't avoid those 12 problems, two consequences. One is, you can't call yourself a brahmana, despite who your parents may happen to be. Secondly, if you lack those qualities, all the Vedic chanting in the world isn't going to save you, isn't going to protect you. We'll see that in our next class. All right. Some closing announcements. Tomorrow, we have our program for children at 11 o'clock. At 5 o'clock, we have our mindful movement and meditation. And at 6:15, every month, we do a special chanting and meditation session. Last month, we did it on Lord Shiva. We had mantras and stotras to Lord Shiva chanted in a very meditative way. We'll be doing that tomorrow for Sri Rama, since we're coming up on Ram Navami. So chanting of Rama mantras and stotras in a very meditative way tomorrow at 6:15. Come and join us. I should mention our website is down again. So I know some of you wanted to print this out for today's class. I'm sorry. Volunteers are working hard to resolve the problem. So please bear with us. Be patient. The library will be open after class. We'll conclude with our prayers.